know as a child, you know, you grew up with the radio station in New York City. There was WABC, WHBI, you know, WBLS. And, you know, I grew up with a lot of soul music. I grew up with pop music. I grew up with everything from Earth, Wind & Fire, Stevie Wonder, Elton John, even folk music, Joni Mitchell, you know, America. Like, you know, so many different amazing groups that you hear as a child when, you know, you're going to the beaches and parks with your family, you're in the car. And, you know, I was always an avid listener on the radio, you know, to radio. You know what I mean? I was always listening to the radio as a child. But at the same time, you know, my father played tenor sax, and he was a Latin and jazz musician. So he always played in bands. And at home, he would listen to John Coltrane, Charlie Parker, you know, Miles Davis. And he would play along to those records out loud with his tenor sax while the songs were playing. So, you know, you heard a lot of jazz. And then my mother's younger brother was a famous salsa singer, if not the most amazing salsa singer of all time, Hector Lavoe, who is my mother's younger brother. So he would come home with all this music that he was making in the studio, you know, and also listening to the Fania All-Stars, Fania Records. And that was the label that my uncle was on. And so you heard a lot of that music on Saturday afternoons when your mom's cleaning and stuff. And, you know, that was always like the, you know, the grown-up music. And you know, I grew up, I was an old soul, you know. I grew up listening to all these amazing artists, you know, from rock to jazz to R&B, soul, you know, as a child. So that's in my ears for many years. You're talking, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, listening to this music. And then eventually, once you start going to the record store down the block, then you start discovering. And that's what ended up happening.
Global Groove on The World Show with Nikki B.
Yeah, I see it as a Latin soul, man. It's definitely Latin soul. You know, I grew up in the neighborhood with Latinos, black people, you know, a mix, you know, of people, but especially Latinos and blacks together in up in the Bronx. You know, so soul has always been a big part of my life. You know, obviously my Latin roots and jazz with my dad. You know, and then what I've listened to, you know, just being around the block, because in my area, you could hear jazz coming out of one window. You could hear salsa coming out of another window. You could hear pop music coming out of another window, you know, and all the big artists at that time, you know, Gil Scott-Heron, Mandrill, you know, War. You heard all that in the neighborhoods, you know.
I started at 12 years old,
We're talking 1977. Yeah, 77, 78, you know, and, you know, right at that time, my good friend that I used to hang out with, his older brother, had two turntables and a GLI 9000 mixer, I believe it was. And, he had some techniques, and, his collection of music was, breakbeats, a lot of breakbeats. You know, it was rock, jazz, soul, funk. All, but in the middle of the songs, there was always these drum beats that was sounded amazing, the breaks, you know what I mean? So my thing was always to try to extend these parts of the songs and do what I saw happening in the neighborhoods, you know, in the block parties where you saw the other DJs, the older DJs. I mean, the DJs, they were older, you know, they were playing and they were scratching and they were blending. So a lot of that was going on, and I've always loved the blending part of it and the, you know, extending vamps of songs, which were the best parts of the songs, you know, with that collection that I was playing on, you know, and it was all the breakbeats that I remember hearing in the neighborhood. So it was so good to hear them and go through the records. And so my friend said, get on it, check it out, you know, and that's what we were doing while the older brother was, you know, not home, you know, so that's how it kind of started. And then I had another neighbor who did weddings and sweet 16s, and he did it's called a mobile DJ, you know. You would bring your own equipment and you would play, you would be hired to play for, you know, events and stuff. And I started being his apprentice, and then while I was apprentice, I said, you know, you don't have to pay me, but I would like if you can let me borrow your equipment for a certain amount of time. So he would let me borrow two turntables, a mixer, and he had about 20 crates of records, and I would pick about 4 or 5 crates and take it to my house and set it up, and two speakers. And I would listen to the disco records. He had a great disco collection. So we're talking 78, 79 right there. And, you know, I would listen to all the disco music and listen to all the parts and you know, see how the you know, where the parts of the songs were that were the best parts. And I would try to extend those parts and blend them. And that's how it started. And then from there, by 1980, I started doing my own parties with some friends of mine. You know, there was a friend named John Rivera. We used to do parties together at the YMCA. You know, so he had equipment. By that time, I started collecting a little music. And then I was in high school. So I had a friend of mine who had his brother owned a record pool. It was called SOS Record Pool in the Bronx. And he had a ton of records in his basement. And he would say, Louis, man, see what you like in there. And that's when I started looking through the stuff. And this is like 80, 81. And he let me take home like 2 crates of records. So I just kept building my music and then going to that little record store down the block from my home. And that's where the collection started. Personally, I really started like working at a club every week in 85, you know, but from 80 to 85, I was doing a lot of mobile parties myself and, you know, throwing your own parties, you know, charging for tickets and stuff like that. And my sisters had a hair shop, so I used to use their hair shop, you know, for the place where you buy the tickets. You know, she would hold the tickets there and they would go there and buy some tickets and stuff for the event. Next thing you know, I had like 600 people, you know, coming to our parties. And in 84 is when I really got a chance to do something at a really nice club. It wasn't like a gym or a hall anymore. It was a club. And the cool thing about this club, it was the only club in the Bronx that had a Richard Long sound system, a small Richard Long sound system. And Richard Long is the sound designer who did the Paradise Garage and Zanzibar. So, you know, by the early 80s, by 80 even, is when I first went to the Paradise Garage. You know, all this is happening at the same time. And I'm just absorbing and trying to just get out there and hear as much as I can other DJs and experience New York City. Once I started going to the Paradise Garage with my friend who was a member and my sisters who went there, then I went to other clubs like Zanzibar. So I saw, at their prime, I saw Larry Levan, I saw Tony Humphries, I mean, who is still doing his thing now. But I mean, I saw Tony Humphries at Zanzibar, I saw Kenny Carpenter at Bonds. Like, these are all DJs that are still playing now, except Larry Levan, rest in peace. But, you know, I learned from them, you know what I mean? Even David Morales in 84, so many other DJs and clubs that I went to. Raul, DJ Raul, there was one from Bro 96 who was amazing. I mean, these guys would blend and really like my style came from listening to a lot of them. And then I created my own, you know, feeling of when I'm playing music.
Yeah.
started working in clubs in 85. I was working in a club called The Devil's Nest, which was a club of about 1,200 people, 1,000 people. And, you know, we were packing them in for like eight to 10 months or something, like 10 months maybe I worked there. And things started moving very fast. And all of a sudden I started, you know, I was going to the city a lot. I met a lot of people in the industry. And then I got a job at Heartthrob, which was my first big club in New York City, fit about 3,000 people. And from that club in the Bronx, I went straight to this club in the city. So every time I went to a club, I started working one night, then they would hire me for the second night. So let's say I was started on Fridays, they would give me then Friday and Saturday. That's at the Devil's Nest. Then I went to the city, same thing. I started Fridays, and then they started giving me Friday and Saturday. And that became my my residency for 2 years, 86 to 88. But when I was there, people were approaching me to work on remixes. And one of my early remixes, the first ones, was on Tommy Boy Records. And it was Joey Gardner who worked there. And he was also the manager of a group called TKA with a movement of music called Freestyle and Latin Hip Hop that I was a big part of from 85 to 90. So, eventually when I got this job at this club in 86 in New York City on 26th Street, that was a club that I used to go to a long time ago and listen to Jellybean Benitez play at. It was the Fun House. And that's where, when I was a kid going there, teenager, into the Fun House and seeing like Madonna in the DJ booth, New Order, Kraftwerk, Arthur Baker, like it was incredible. That whole electro movement, you know, I was there watching and I was in the clubs, you know, with the dancers and everything and having a good time. You know, I wasn't hanging out in the DJ booth. I didn't know Jellybean at that time. I met him later. So, you know, it was crazy that one of the clubs that I loved and one of the DJs that I admired at that time, I ended up playing at the same club he played at, but a few years later, like 4 years later. So it was kind of cool. So I worked at Heartthrob, and while I was working at those clubs, that's when, and even the end of the Devil's Nest, that's when Joey Gardner came up and said, "Hey, you know, I'd love for you to remix a record." He goes, "Oh, remix?" I said, "I never did that before." He goes, "Just come to the studio and just tell me what you hear. You know, just let's bring out what you hear. You know what I mean?" So I said, "Well, it's worth a try." I said, "Let's go." So I knew the original record because it was a record that I broke. It was called Running by Information Society. And when I made that record really huge up in the Bronx, along with some other DJ friends of mine in other clubs, you know, that record was huge. And, you know, I'll never forget when we brought that group, there was lines up the block, on the roof of the club, like everywhere. It was incredible. So they signed that record because I was playing it at that club and it was so huge. You know, Tommy Boy. And it was Joey Gardner who influenced, who got Tom Silverman, who owned Tommy Boy Records, to sign that song. And when he signed it, that's when Joey commissioned me to come in to do a remix with him. And when I went in, I just brought out all these elements I heard in there. I said, "Oh, listen to these hi-hats and listen to these snares and these samples. You know, they're not brought out. Let me bring them out in the mix." And I brought them out in the mix, and it just created a whole new vibe to it. Then did the edits with the Latin Rascals, who are friends of mine as well. You know, I had a lot of friends in the industry by that time, you know, who were also doing a lot of great music. They were doing music before I was. They were actually some of my mentors and teachers in the studio. You know, at that time, a lot of the producers, they really embraced the young. Like, you know, Arthur Baker let me sit in his studio to check out, you know, him work. Jellybean Benitez as well. The Latin Rascals, Andy Panda, like all these guys making music at that time. It was really cool. They were really like, "Hey, you know, if you want to learn, you have any questions, just come in the studio, sit in the back." And I would do that all the time. You know, it's like I found every opportunity. I took advantage of every opportunity in a good way, where I really absorbed from all these greats, or, you know, who have been a part of musical history today. And that was lucky enough to experience that in New York. I would never have been able to experience that anywhere else. You know what I mean? So that was it. When I started doing the remixes, it was Running in 85, 86. And then Then some pop artists as well. Debbie Gibson, I did her first two big records, and she was like a million seller artist. She was equivalent to, Taylor Swift is huge. I mean, but she, I mean, this girl was platinum. She was selling millions of records. But like a Taylor Swift pop type of pop artist, Britney Spears, let's say, you know, that's what Debbie Gibson was at in 86. You know what I mean? All over the radio. So I had records that were huge on the radio and stuff like that. But at the same time that was happening, and I was part of this Latin hip hop and freestyle movement, I made about 80 of those records. I was loving house music. You know, I was there when house music first started. So I was playing it as well in the clubs as well as that music. I played hip hop, reggae, Latin hip hop, freestyle, house, disco. I mean, I was playing all that music, but it was kind of like the way I put it together that made it really special, and it kind of flowed through the night. You know what I mean? It wasn't abrupt type of mixing. It was really, it flowed really well. So that type of DJing I did from 85 to 90. But when I started working at Heartthrob is when I started meeting other people. Like Todd Terry came to me with his demos, and I was playing Todd Terry's music. So I was like the Pied Piper for kids 16 to 20 years old. And you took 3,000 kids coming out Fridays, Saturdays. It was crazy. You know what I mean? It was, you know, it was really, really good. So it was a big outlet for a lot of artists to give me a test pressing of a song. And in a matter of a few weeks, I would break that record. It would be the biggest record in the club. You know, I kind of knew how to do that. And I learned that from watching Larry Levan, Tony Humphries, Bruce Forrest. Like, those were my favorite DJs that I listened to in the early 80s to mid and even beyond, you know, and learned a lot from. I kept playing in the clubs from there. 88, I went to Studio 54. Studio 54, not in the heyday when all the movie stars were there. Later on, they were renting out the club. So there was a big promoter in New York City, a big promoter who was who would take a club and just do his parties there. And he had a big following of people who would come. And he wanted me to come from the other club to his club. And then I ended up moving to that club and working there for another almost a little less than 9 months maybe. But it was a powerful time because there the crowds got even bigger. It was like 4,000 kids. It was, wow, madness. And in one night, you would have, I'll never forget, there was one performance that we had that was 10 City. It was Public Enemy and India. So that shows you the scope of the music, the scope of the music we play. Because I would pick the talent to play in the club. I would tell the owner, he'd say, who do you want to perform in the club? And I would say, hey, boom, boom, boom. You know, so we would do that. And, of course, there were other people involved and everything, you know, with those bookings and everything. But it was really special to see, like, all those kinds of music together in one place, you know. So by that time, I had already done a lot of these records. And then when it came to 1989, I said, you know what, I want to do house music because I really feel that I could, you know, really extend my musicality in that style of music. And, you know, I've already been playing it for so many years. I knew the New York style, I knew the Chicago style, I knew the Detroit style. So, you know, and then I started creating my own vibe. And Todd Terry says, look, Louie, I'm doing so many records. I like the way you mix records, the way you do all the freestyle stuff and the stuff you're doing. Why don't you mix some of my records? And if you look at that era between 89 and 90, I did a lot of Todd Terry records, maybe about 30 of them or something. And, from Black Riot to Sax to all the aliases he had, I mixed the DMS. I mixed a lot of those records. And so, you know, I was just getting my sound in house music. And then I started doing a couple of records in 89. And once I did that, 1990 came. And then when 1990 came, that sound, I mean, I was really drawing thousands of kids by that time. So, but it was getting a little rowdy. So I said, I don't know, I just feel like I gotta, it's the time that I need to change, you know what I'm saying? Like what I'm, you know, the way I'm playing, what I'm doing. So 1990 came, I took like a year and a half off. And when I took that year and a half off, it's the same year that I met Kenny through Todd Terry, Kenny Dope. So I met Kenny because I liked the record that he had done. And Todd is from Brooklyn, too. They're both from Brooklyn. I'm from the Bronx. So Todd said, oh, this is Kenny Dope. He lives in Brooklyn. He works at a record store. You know, I'll connect you with him. And he did. And then Kenny and I met, and I wanted to remix that record. I ended up not remixing it. But at the same time, too, after doing all those records I had done, I was offered an album deal, an artist album deal on Atlantic Records. This is 89, you're talking. So 1990, I'm recording an album. Like, you know, I was really young. They gave me all this money to do a whole album. I was like, wow, okay. So I just started making this, you know, kind of dream album at that time. And, you know, there were artists in our scene, in the clubs that I really, that could really sing. They were really amazing. And two of them were Mark Anthony and India. So when I got this album deal, I brought in Mark Anthony as my partner and the singer. And we kind of like were like, you know, we said, why don't we be the dance version of, or the pop, let's say dance version of Hector Lavoe, my uncle, and Willie Colon. And that was the idea. And then I brought in India to write all the songs and sing the backgrounds on the whole album. So that album came out. But while I was working on that album and I met Kenny, I never got to remix that record for him. But I said, you know, I'm working in the studio now. Why don't you come? And I really like the way you make beats. I said, why don't you make beats to some of these grooves that I have in the studio? So he came in the studio. He ended up spending 6 months with me in the studio. And we finished that album. And you know, he did a lot of the beats on it and stuff. And we started getting acquainted. And then I said, let's do a couple of sessions, just me and you, without bringing in, like, you know, because I, at that time, I was already doing, like, string orchestration with amazing arrangers, drummers. Like, I brought in the live element at that time, you know. But with Kenny, I said, let's try something together. And, I play keyboards. As a child, I took classical lessons from ages 6 to 11. I forgot to say that. And then later on, I took theory with two great piano players from the Latin jazz scene. Oscar Hernandez is one of them. And Ricky Gonzalez, they are two great, you know, piano players doing their thing. They have their own, you know, albums out and all kinds of stuff. But and they worked with the greats. Even my uncle, some of them worked with my uncle. So anyway, they taught me theory. I kind of went back into the piano, got theory. And then I was learning a lot about, you know, minor ninths and stuff like that, minor sevenths and ninths. And, you know, if when you think about minor sevenths and ninths, you think about Roy Ayers. He put a lot of that in his style of playing. And that's why I connected so much with Roy Ayers. And in the future, who knows, that's probably why I connected so much with him, because, you know, those voicings were in my head. And that's what I started playing. A lot of the early Masters at Work stuff for the first 5 years is me playing keyboards and Kenny on the drums, on the beats, I mean. So we developed this style together, and it kind of felt different. It was house music, but it had a different thing to it, you know. And then we always wanted to bring in, you know, African, Brazilian, break beats, hip-hop. I mean, we brought it all into house music. That's what we did. And we always, you know, wanted to do that from the beginning. You know, so when we started creating these kind of dubs, they were kind of cool dubs. We put one on the B side of Ride on the Rhythm. It's called The Ride. And from there, those pop records I was doing before and Latin hip hop, especially the pop side of it, Atlantic Records reached out again and they wanted me to remix records. It was Joey Carvello. I give him all the credit for signing me with the album, for bringing me in to do all those remixes. And he brought me in. He says, look, Debbie Gibson's recording again. This was 1991 or something. she's recording again, and there's other artists too that she has under her wing, like Chris Cuevas and stuff, like she was naming all this stuff. I want you to remix some of the records. So I said, all right, cool. I said, Kenny, man, I'm getting these remixes now. Let's get down together. This is the time for Masters at Work, you know. So and Masters at Work is a childhood, you know, that's his crew name from many years ago. And when we needed a name, I said, okay, we're going to do these remixes. We need a name. He goes, well, I got this name, Masters at Work. I said, perfect. He said, I'll interview Terry for two singles, but I'll grab it back. And he did. So we became Masters at Work. And then with Masters at Work, since we were getting these pop acts, I said, man, when Kenny and I were talking, and then we said, why don't we take the B-sides of the records and put this new vibe that we got that has nothing to do with the song? Maybe we can grab a hook or two and put them in, you know, and pop it in, or something that's hooky on the original. But we're not going to do the entire song. We'll do an entire song version for them, but let's use these B-sides. And we started calling them Masters at Work dubs. And that's when we did Debbie Gibson. That's when we, you know, Chris Cuevas. That's when we did Chic. That's when we did. And anyway, when we're doing all these records, these Masters at Work dubs started becoming popular. Saint Etienne, and they were played even on the radio. I was like, oh goodness, on, you know. So it was cool to see that reaction. And then you get, like, you know, when we did Debbie Gibson One Step Ahead, you never would think that Frankie Knuckles, you know, Tony Humphries, you know, when I did Take Me Away, that was one of my early house records alone. Junior Vasquez was playing it. Like, all these DJs were playing records that you wouldn't think would play from a pop artist. But it was the B-sides. And it was called Masters at Work Dub. You know, everybody wanted a Masters at Work Dub. You know, Madonna, Michael Jackson, Jermaine. Like, I mean, you know, Donna Summers. The list goes on. Kenny and I took those a solid 10 years of working 16 to 18 hours a day. Like 5 days a week, 6 days a week. It was crazy. Like, we were living in that studio, solid. And that's that catalog that you hear today of Masters at Work that really, I mean, I think it's influenced a lot of people and from all different genres. You know what I mean? So that music that we made at that time is what affected, you know, people even in the future. That was it. Once we did the Masters at Work thing, you know, we were remixing hundreds of records, even into the thousands, and it got really, like, heavy studio work that we started owning the studio. It just went there, and then all the creations we made, you know what I mean? When we made the Nervous track, that was the birth of New Eurekan Soul. You know, when I did those, we did solo projects when I did Hard Drive, you know, with Deep Inside and records like that. And then Kenny did Bucketheads with These Sounds. You know, we were just, like, doing so much stuff. It was just really creative. We had two rooms in the studio. They were always running. You know, I had friends that would come in, like Mood to Swing in the other room, and I would go in there and do a track with them. Next thing you know, it was Lude shouting out. You know what I mean? You know, it's just so much happening. And then we had great engineers, and we started working with musicians. You know, so once we got to the musicians, I got really spoiled. I didn't really want to play that much anymore. Yeah, so, you know, that's it. And in the 90s, I mean, you know, we really impacted the scene worldwide, you know, especially England, Italy, Japan, and South Africa in the late 90s. Like, when I went there, we're talking 99 now, and I first stepped foot into Johannesburg and Soweto and went to play for the Kiss FM party, right? It was really a game changer. It was just like, wow, I didn't think that I would come that far across the world and feel what I felt when I played that night, you know, in front of 30,000 people. It was really, you know, an experience that I will never forget. And then meeting all the people, it was beautiful. You know, I did some smaller gigs too, because even Kid Funk told me, he goes, yeah, you played at the club where he was playing at. I think we played together. It was when I went in 99, I believe. You know, it was his party or something. I wasn't sure. Oh, he was on the lineup. And then I met Osquito and the family. Forget about it. Greg Maloka, of course, he's the one who brought us. And he's the one responsible for bringing us out there and breaking our music to in South Africa. You know, so, you know, I really owe a big thanks to Greg Maloka, to Osquito, to Pepsi, to Vinny, to Christos, to Fresh, because, and I might be missing one or two, they were such a huge part of the reason why I went there. I mean, they played my music, our music, and they broke our music, and, you know, and they appreciated it.
Sabalaza, we're not. contact.
Goodness, you're talking several generations because there are a few, but I mean, you know, now there's so many different amazing sounds coming from South Africa. You know, I think that, you know, I mean, it's beautiful that different styles have evolved, you know, like amapiano and three-step and, you know, all the stuff that's coming from South Africa reminds me, you know, of a long time ago, just when, you know, when we all started with house music and everything, and the influence was there, and we were bringing in, you know, what we wanted to bring into the music. So it's really beautiful to see what's being created right now and coming from South Africa. I'm playing a lot of it around the world. You know, I have a lot of projects that I've been working on, a new Elements of Life album. There's new masters at work. There's New Eurekan Soul. There's working on a play. I mean, there's work. So many things that I'm working on right now. So there's a lot of music that I'm going to be able to share with the people when I come out in a week and a half. So I'm really excited about what I'm going to hear out there. I'm interested and I'm excited about that, as well as what I'm going to bring out there. And, you know, a lot of music that my friends make. I don't only play my music. I play music that's good, you know. So and then we might take it back a little here and there, but I think it's very important to show what's coming as well, you know what I mean, so that we can introduce the new sounds to all the people.
Global Grooves on the World Show with Nikki B. We'll be right back.
of life.
Everybody knows elements of life. Oh, 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 yeah. Elements of life. Birds, they do fly on the edge of the sky, like a prayer from my soul to God it must rise. Life is a seed in which we have to grow. Certain things in life that we will never know, but trees are there to show us how to stand for what we
stand
know.
For what
in
we
the spirit
know.
Of love, we must let the hatred go. Material gain, ooh, never lie for righteous things.
Yeah.
At the scale, we must balance, we must share precious things.
Reach an area where they probably may not reach. You know what I mean? So, we're experts at what we do. So we know what's going to work for the dance floors because we're playing so much. We're still playing, you know, music everywhere around the world. So, and to different dance floors. So we kind of know by now what works where. And, you know, it's beautiful when you have a record that works everywhere, you know. But, yeah, I think that the value of the remix it's a great thing because it brings the artist into a place where they may not have ventured into yet. You know, as far as their voice, their song. You know, when we do these remixes, a lot of the times you're just getting an a cappella and you're creating new music. So you're writing new music, you know, to this melody and to this song, or whether you're doing a dub or whatever you're doing. You know, I think that for me, you know, remixes and re-edits and reworks are, you know, if they're done tastefully, that's the main thing. You know, they got to be done tastefully and they got to compliment the artist, compliment the song. Wish my baby Anani a happy Mother's Day. Thank you so much for being an incredible, incredible mom.
Oh, yeah.
Show your love. Show your love. Global Girls on the World Show with Nikki B.
Show your love. Right now.
I sing to you a song of love, a message from spirits above. I bring to you a melody the angels sing in harmony. I play for you a rhythm with beats from the Creator's drum. I'll write for you of hope to live you when you're feeling low.
guess that was it. That was quick.